As an actor, I made a career out of surviving personal and family dramas on daytime television. In real life, I've also had my fair share of challenges, just like everybody else. But TV and film could be a nice escape from our own daily struggles. But let's face it, life is not TV and film. Yeah. It's time to keep it real. With Real Conversations with Jacob Young, sponsored by Boys Town. On this week's Real Conversations, we're being joined by a very, very special guest. This icon of the music world was part of the best charting female group in U.S. history. She's not only had 12 number one hit singles, she is a music rights activist, a best-selling author, a former U.S. cultural ambassador, and a motivational speaker. Now, she's here to help motivate us all in today's mental health podcast. And joining me today is the supremely talented Miss Mary Wilson. Yeah, you know what time it is. It's time to keep it real on Real Conversations with Jacob Young, brought to you by Boys Town. So welcome the one and only Miss Mary Wilson. Hey, Mary, how are you today?
I'm really well. Thank you for asking, because I've not felt good in the last couple of weeks, but I'm much better now. Well, especially since the new year's here, 2021. Woo!
So true. Well, I'm so honored to have you on the podcast today. Thank you so much for being here. You know, recently, Mary added dramatic actress to her very long list of credits. And we just worked together a few weeks ago on a Zoom reading of A Country Christmas Carol, which is a new version of A Christmas Carol. And I played Ben, a spoiled Ebenezer country music star. And Mary was the ghost of Christmas past. We had so much fun working together that I just wanted to have her on my podcast. So thank you again for being here.
And you know, all you have to do is just touch my sequins.
Sequins. Yes. I love that. So I got some questions for you today. And I want to get right to it.
Okay.
So growing up in Detroit, you began singing at a very young age. Can you tell our listeners how your musical career began and how music changed your life for the better?
Yes. Well, you know, you don't know, but I'm going to tell you. I thought you had read my books, Jacob. I will have to send you one. Then you'll know the whole story. But anyway, there were four of us, four primates. We weren't supremes yet. So in 1959, it was, the four of us started singing in Detroit, Michigan, as you mentioned. And, we were, still in, you know, as you can imagine, elementary school at 13 years old. So Florence Ballard and I met at a, school talent show. And it was amazing because, I never thought I could sing. I never thought about being a singer, but my mother said when I was born and the doctor spanked me, I started singing. So there you go. There was a talent show and I signed up for it because I had just seen Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers on one of the TV shows. And I just fell in love with them. And so when I joined this, talent show, I signed up and I was singing one of the teenager songs. It was called, I'm Not a Juvenile Delinquent. Mm-hmm. So here I am. Here I am at 13 years old. Never really thought about being a singer, but up there and, you know, gyrating, and I put on my brother's do-rag because back then all the black guys wore scarves over here, which stopped the grease from stopping from
tripping.
Yeah. Jerry curls and all that stuff. But anyway, so when I finished, Miss Florence Ballard, who was also, she was like 13 and a half years old, and she came up there. Now you better hide your microphone because this gets kind of loud. She was singing, Ave Maria. Now she's only 13 and a half years old. And I'm like, whoa, what a voice, you know, and all the children in the gymnasium, they were like really just clapping, whatever. So afterwards, she and I kind of migrated together and we started talking. She said, you have everybody up there just dancing and whatever. And I said, your voice is great. So this was at a time when, you know, rock and roll was still very new. Mm-hmm. And she said, well, if anyone wants to put together a group, I'll remember you. You remember me. So we became best friends. I didn't even know her. We became best friends. And a couple of weeks later, she ran up to me in the school yard and she said, Mary, this group called the Primes wants to put a group together. And I told them about you. And one of the guys went over and asked this girl, this new girl down the street, Diane, if she wanted to join. And so we all went to these boys' neighborhood, to their apartments. Uh-oh. And and so, you know, our parents probably would have killed us anyway, had they known. But anyway, we went there and we started singing together. We just started harmonizing and we didn't even know each other. We had never sang together or anything like that. And it really sounded good. And they said, well, we want you guys to be our sister group. And we'll call you the Primettes and we're the Primes. Now, yeah. You may know Jacob, these two guys. Two of them went on to become two members of the Temptations.
Ooh, yeah.
That was Eddie Kendricks, who had the very high tenor voice.
Yeah.
Paul Williams. So anyway, we started singing with them and that's how we got together. We sang until we became about 16 years old. Just around Detroit, just doing record hops and, you know, things like that, school things. And pretty soon we decided, you know what, maybe we should go to Motown Records and see if we can get a recording deal. And that's what we did in 1961. And guess what? It's coming up now. January 15th, 1961 was when we signed our recording contract.
Wow.
60 years.
Yes.
60 years old. I mean, is that a magic? Okay. Oh, my God.
Amazing. What a career. And what a fantastic story. Thank you for sharing. Yeah. I might have missed a portion. Did you have musical programs in your school?
Yes. Yes. And I know that's what we want to discuss today. And I have to say it's because of those programs. I said we had never really sang whatever, but yes, from the time I was in the kindergarten, I was always in some kind of art classes and singing classes. I was in every choir, glee club, anything that had to do with music, I was in it. But I was just in it because that's what I did. I thought everybody woke up singing. You know what I mean? So it was nothing special or different. But yes, Detroit, Michigan had, and I have to be very, I want to really be very clear on this. We had the best educational system, I think, in America. We really did. And it was public school. You know, we couldn't afford to go to you know, private schools, anything like that. I didn't even know they existed. But every school that I attended, and I did attend a lot because we moved around a lot, had different classes. And I was always chosen to be in one. So I don't know how they, you know, how they knew. I had no idea.
Well, you know, obviously they knew. But how important do you think it is to have music and arts programs in schools today?
Well, you know, I believe that if we did have those type of classes in our schools, maybe I would not have, because I was sitting up there thinking about boys. Okay. I mean, I'm looking out the window thinking about boys and things like that. But the music classes, I believe, were something that kept me and a lot of the kids from, I shouldn't say kids. I like to say children. I don't like to say kids. That's what kept us in school because, it was something different from schoolwork, you know, like I said, I had it in every school I attended. I had a music class, several.
Yeah. I took music through my entire elementary, high school, all the way. I still play guitar and sing. I'm just still an amateur, but it meant a lot. And it was a great escape. And, you know, going through the things that I had happened in my life, I really leaned heavy into music and the arts programs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. What kind of advice do you have for kids today who are looking for an outlet for those energies and if they have talent and interest in music?
Well, let me back up just a little bit. I really feel that we, I don't know if I should say parents. I don't think it's parents, but I mean, let's just say, I believe that we have taken away something so very, very important to America. because I mean, I've traveled all over the world, and I've given master classes in all, you know, in the, on our African continents, over, I'm just all over the world. And, everyone there would want to sing American songs. I mean, everyone there wanted to come to America to learn, because, and that's what they would do. I'd say, well, can you sing in your own language so I can see what you sound like in your own language, you know? Sure. But no, they loved America because we really, American had, I mean, music was such a big part. And I got to say rock and roll, you know, country music. I mean, everything. We have just been the best thing that has happened to the world. So, and that is because we gave our children something to look forward to. We gave them music and they excelled in it. I mean, look at you as an actor and all those kind of things. In school, boys had shop. Did you ever have shop in your school?
Oh, yeah. I took shop.
See, we had shop. Girls had home economics. I learned how to make mayonnaise. Okay. we taught children how to drive. We had driver's education in school. Yeah. All those things were given to us in school. And Detroit, Michigan had all of those in all of the schools. So I've got to say to the Detroit educational system, they did a wonderful job of, even though we were poor, we had a great education. So I'm thinking that has been missing now is that we don't teach our children. We don't teach them. So everyone else has come to America. They've taken, you know, that they're in college and all those kind of things. And we don't even send our children to college anymore. You know what I mean? It's like amazing. We've taken all of that away from them. So it's so very, very important that somehow or another, parents or the educational system or American politics, whatever, they got to put education on the top of the list of things to do now. Because if we don't do that, we're not raising our children to be smart and educated and talented as we all were. Because in the 60s, when I was growing up, I thought I was going to be on the moon party and all these now, you know, after, you know, doing all these wonderful things. And look, we're back there. We're right back where we were. And that's because we're not teaching our children right. I was so happy when they had this thing out there about Black Lives Matter, because it wasn't just Black people up there. It was everybody up there. Everyone. Because everybody recognizes it. It's been taken away from everyone, you know. So that's, to me, education is something that we must put back into our system of priorities and things to do now that we have a new, president-elect and vice president. We must tell all the people there, must tell our electorate officials what we want as parents. I'm a grandparent. I have 11 grandchildren. No, I have 10. I have one great grandchild. But anyway, so, you know, we must be able to teach our children now, you know, something, because if we don't, they're going to go right back. My mother couldn't read nor write. Okay. And that was when that was not mandatory for, for people, Black people, to go to school and get an education. But we're almost right back there now. I mean, you know, well, children are not getting education they need.
With the programs being pulled out of schools, especially the arts programs, and like you were saying, the driver's ed programs and the shop programs, you know, all the kids are doing is, you know, they're not having those outlets, those elective outlets, the things that, you know, keep them learning throughout the day. You know, it's nice to have that reprieve from math and all those things that we have to take no matter what, but now their nose is to the grindstone and that's all they're doing.
And that's not exciting to them.
No, my kids, you know, they're bored. If I don't get them doing something else outside of that, they'll probably end up hating me. So I couldn't agree with you more. It makes me so upset to see these programs being taken, and you're so right. We should be, you know, calling our congressman and woman and making sure that we are in touch with them and demand that these programs stay intact or go back into the schools.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it really is up to us, because we do elect those people. Yes. And, you know, many of them are my friends. I can say most of my friends are up in Capitol Hill right now. Some of them were on the floor, but thank God they got up, right?
Yeah, no doubt.
But yeah, it's up to us to tell them what we want, you know, them to push for. And you have all of these other groups who are pushing for other things, you know, and you know, they're selling, they're allowing drugs to come into our country. They're allowing all these things to come in, but we must put our foot down because it is us. We can elect them all out. Or don't elect any of them. Right. Then what would happen?
Yeah.
You know, so.
Hopefully a better world.
Yeah. Our children are very important. And I'm glad that you, you know, you asked me to be a part of this because so often we, you know, we don't have a chance to talk about things that we really, that we feel are very important to us as human beings and as parents and as grandparents. So it's nice to have someone to, you know, who recognizes that this needs need to be talked about, you know, and discussed, and people need to put their feelings out there, what they, you know, want the world. We can't sit back and just let this go on without us putting our say so in.
Right. Absolutely.
My mom used to say.
And being a father of three myself, I feel it's has to happen. It's just, it's in my nature to care. And it doesn't even have to be my children. I worry all the time. I worry about, I was in foster care for a slight time in my life, and you know, and it was a great family. So I can't say that I had a bad situation with that. But I worry for kids, you know, because they're so young, and it just takes a couple of things to happen in their life, and they're down the wrong path. And that's what we're really trying to focus here is on mental health. And one of the things that is recommended to kids who are looking for an outlet for their emotions and their feelings is to journal their thoughts. Now, you wrote two best-selling books about your life as a Supreme. Writing an autobiography is a lot like writing in a diary. Did you find that writing your story helped process your own thoughts and feelings?
Well, yeah, I actually kept diaries. I kept diaries until I was 55 years old. Okay. I started, in fact, I started when one of my teachers, I was in the 12th grade. And well, let's go back. I was a freshman going into high school there. And one of the teachers came up to me. His name was Mr. Boone. And he came up to me, and it's kind of scary because I had heard about Mr. Boone. You know those teachers that everyone hates to get? You know, you said, no, I hope I don't get in his class.
Yeah.
So I had heard about him. And he came up to me. He says, Miss Wilson, I understand that you sing with this little group called the Primates and that you think you're a little star or something like that. He says, well, I will see if you're a star when I get you into my class. And he said, I will guarantee you that I will have you in every single class from this time until you graduate. And I'm like, oh my God, what this is? I mean, how did he even know who I was? What? But we had been singing, you know, like I said, we started singing at 13. So even when we went into high school, we were still singing. And I guess, and we had a couple of records out, you know, they were local, local kind of records. They were not hits, but they were good. And so I was really surprised. Well, I did have him every single year in English. And so you mentioned math in your monologue there. And you said math, that was my worst subject. Thank God I didn't have him there, but I had him in English. And he had me, and I really did well in English. I mean, I really, really did. But I kept a diary because in my 12th year, he said, Miss Wilson, he says, you know, I know you really think you're a star. Now you got them little records out. He said, but, you know, if you don't pass my class, he said, you won't be traveling with that group. And I'm like, oh my God. So anyway, I wrote this paper. I wrote a little thesis or whatever you call those papers. Mm-hmm. And I wrote about my life up to that point. You said you were in foster care. I was kind of in something like that. I was given to my aunt and uncle when I was 4.5 years old. And I lived with them until I was about 10. Well, I didn't know they weren't my aunt and uncle. I thought they were my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
So when I finally found out from a neighbor that they were not my mom and my dad, then my mom took me, and it was like my world just came tumbling down, right? And so I wrote about that. Yeah. And when he got the paper, he said, he called me into his room. He says, "Miss Wilson, I read this little paper that you wrote." He says, "And I think that you should actually consider becoming a writer and not a supreme, not a singer." I'm like, what in the heck is he talking about? Right. Mm-hmm. All I want to do is go down to Motown and record. So anyway, he gave me an A++++++ all over mm-hmm. the paper. But that, then he said, when he said that, I was going down to Motown to something, to record or something. And so everybody was coming in, Marvin Gaye, Stevie Wonder, The Miracles, Mary West, all these stars. Right. And so I started writing about this. And that's when I started keeping my diaries. So from that day on, I kept a diary until I was 55 years old. And so when I wrote my books, I didn't even have to reread my diaries because I had already written it all down. but I think writing, keeping a journal or a diary, even if you just said, today I did this and when I went to bed, da, 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 even whatever it is, you know, I think that it's good therapy. It's good sort of knowing yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and not getting caught up in what people think you are. You're writing down your own thoughts. I mean, thoughts are very powerful things. And, you know, people kind of just let them just go across here and you need to write them down.
Yeah.
So it really, to answer your question, it really did help me, to sort of have my own thoughts and know myself.
I would imagine too, navigating through a professional career like yours and the mm-hmm. ins and the outs of the business, that probably really helped keep you focused.
Yeah. And grounded too. Yeah. It kept me really grounded because, you know, it's amazing. People see you in a certain way and then you started seeing yourself the way they see you. And a lot of times that's not healthy, you know, and look at the young stars, you're an actor, look at the young stars who are up there and they become famous or whatever. And then that's over because at a certain time, you know, you grow up, then you become another kind of person. They don't want you anymore. And so who are you? What do you do? You kind of lost because you're in their eyes, mm-hmm. not in your own eyes. So it's very important to really put, I think Michael Jackson's song, The Man in the Mirror, is really great.
I mean, that's something
I do all the time. When I'm putting on my makeup, you know, I'm looking in the mirror.
It comes right on, whether it's on or not.
This is who I am.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
you know, one of the things I loved about you when meeting you is that when we called you about doing a country Christmas carol reading, you jumped on board right away because it was a new challenge. How mm-hmm. important is it for kids and adults to keep challenging mm-hmm. themselves?
I do a lot of lectures and I talk about that a lot. Let me see. What was your question? So, you know, new challenges and yeah. doing something different. I say dreams do come true, you know, and people, I think that we, the Supremes, we did sort of do what you just asked. We dared to dream.
Right.
And that's what you have to do over and over and over again. I mean, life changes. I mean, certain things come up and you got to learn how to jump back up there and do something. People say about me, you're a survivor. I'm not a survivor. I just keep on walking. You know what I mean? And if you keep on moving, you got to kind of come into something. You know what I mean? So you got to keep your mind a little. I have a son who's he's a Libra. And, he has this thing about he's either here or here. You know, I said, you got to get a little balance. You know what I mean? Yeah. And in the balance, you got to know how to change up a bit. You got to be a little flexible. So I don't think I'm a survival. And I do think that people do need to dare to dream. I think that's how you keep changing and keep growing. I'm 76 and a half. Well, pretty soon, March, I'll be 77. I still think about doing different things. I mean, I hope I'm going to be here a little longer so I can do a couple more things that I really, you know, want to do. I want to do a documentary on the Supremes or a movie or a Broadway play, something about the Supremes, because I just feel that we really did a lot for women, for the Black movement, for a lot of things. So I'm always continuing doing something. So that's why when your project came up with the Ghost of Christmases Past, I decided to just, this is something I've been wanting to do for a long time. I still want to act. I mean, and I want to do all those things, but sometimes, you know, time or your situation or money or economics, all this stuff, sure. you can't, you know, because your hands are sort of tied. So I really, yeah, I look for opportunities.
Absolutely. You were so fantastic in that. You really were. I mean, we all were talking about it afterwards, everybody. I want to kind of go back a little bit. Real Conversations with Jacob Young, it's a mental health podcast that's sponsored by Boys Town. Now, yes. what you were saying about Dare to Dream, your motivational lecture series, it focuses mm-hmm. on reaching goals and triumph over adversity. What would you say to listeners who might be going through a difficult time right now and are looking for something to motivate or something to comfort them?
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's different for everyone. I mean, it really, really is. I have the ability, what I would say to give you something from my experience, I have a saying of look for a silver lining. There is a silver lining in everything. And as I mentioned, when we started singing back in the 60s, it was for us to dare to dream in the 1960s. That was really almost like an impossible thing because as Black people and as Black women, you know, the laws were not even there to support us. We weren't citizens. And so to try to dare to dream in certain situations can be very difficult, and looking for a silver lining can look like it's very difficult, but you got to, that's what you got to do. You really do have to look at it and not look at the moment, but beyond the moment, because beyond the moment, it could be something there just around the corner. I mean, you never know. You know, that would be my suggestion. What I've done is just, as I said, I just keep on walking. That's a song, huh? Keep on walking.
Yeah, absolutely.
I just want to add one other thing that just came to my mind. A lot of times when people say things to me or whatever, it kind of goes over my head. So therefore, it doesn't really get into me, and I can see beyond it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because if you take things too seriously, it can be quite scary. I've been in some scary situations, you know, and I remember one time I said, God, please help me get out of this one. You got to stop and listen and take a moment.
Yeah.
Sometimes you can't always jump and do. You can't go with your emotions all the time. I think your emotions should be there, but you cannot allow them to direct you. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
Oh, I never said it like that.
I love that. Wow. You better write that down.
I need to write that one down. Oh, I do want to say something too about your children. Thank you. Because you mentioned you were talking about that. And yes, you had I think it was your son. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if your daughter was on the program we did. And that's one of the ways too that we can help our young people is by inviting them into our lives. We can't always treat them like, okay, they're just young. They don't know, you know, you need to share some of that with them so they can see you and really see you. And they can only see you if you allow them to see you. You know, so yeah. and invite them in. So I applaud you for that. I remember it was your son. He was like really cool. I'm like, oh boy, he's been acting a long time, huh?
Well, yeah, it is such great advice that you're saying is you have to be able to talk to them. And you talk to them about mm-hmm. anything and invite mm-hmm. them and bring them in and allow them to experience life with you. We so mm-hmm. so consistently just want to shove our children to the side and be like out of sight, out of mind, you know, speak when spoken to. I mean, that was, you know, not always my situation, but it was a lot more than I know my children's situation. I really try to involve them as a family. Mm-hmm. And I know it means a lot to him, and I know it means a lot to my wife and my other mm-hmm. my other daughters as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because they used to tell us, they say, go in the other room. This is not for, this is for adults.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And that really plays really heavy on you as you get older. You go, why did they do that?
Mm-hmm. Wait, but you know, I do have to say this, and I want to, because now that I'm older, I realize that, you know, as parents, you do have a lot on your shoulders.
Sure.
You really have a lot of responsibilities, and sometimes you just want to shelter your children. You want to take care, you know, you don't want them to know the hard times, but sometimes they have to know. And you have to allow that, you know, and sometimes maybe not, you know, not everything.
Right. Mm-hmm. In 2002, Secretary of State Colin Powell appointed you to be Culture Connect Ambassador for the U.S. State Department. First of all, what an incredible honor, and it really shows just how much you are loved. What are some of the responsibilities in this position?
First, I should say that Colin Powell was just really great. Pat Harrison, his assistant, or I think she was the secretary, but with him. But she was the one who traveled with me around the world. And what our responsibility was as people from the arts, because they had sports people in the arts, actors, actresses, all kind of people in from the arts. And we would travel to different countries and continents and whatever. And as I said, do master classes. So what we were supposed to do was to share diplomacy, you know, and how American was the greatest country, and which was great, and how the opportunities that were given to us. And we were to share that. And that's pretty much what we did. I enjoyed it very much because it gave me an opportunity to even just talk about things that I had done that I really didn't think were important, but I could see they were important to other countries and people, you know, and it was major. It really was major because it gave me an opportunity to really see how wonderful America really was. You know what I mean? Even though there's so many things that are not great, as we now know, but they're coming out and we still have an opportunity to rectify those things. So we were able to do that around the world, all of us. And it was quite an experience. I got to say that Colin Powell was the Secretary of State, but he was under President Bush, who it was President Bush's project and program.
Right. I mean, what an honor, though, to be able to be an ambassador in that way and speak to so many. That's such a wonderful career highlight. I could follow in your great footsteps.
Well, you know what? And it's true. We all can. We all stand on someone's shoulder, because I remember when we first became famous, I started singing, and we did some major TV shows. I was on a show with Pearl Bailey. And Louis Armstrong, we met him, and they both were telling us that they were ambassadors to the United States, or for the United States, which was a difference there. Anyway, and so I was really, you know, I was like, whoa, that's heavy. That's major. And I remember Pearl saying, yes, I am an ambassador, and da-da-da, and she was talking, you know. And later on, I became one. I was saying to myself, oh, my God. Look at this. It was major. It was wonderful. It was a wonderful thing to honor. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, absolutely. I wanted to mention something that I had heard about and that I think is really, really beautiful tribute. Your original Supremes member, Florence Ballard, died at only the age of 32. And there's not many women who get U.S. postage stamps in their honor. Can you tell our listeners about your campaign to get a commemorative stamp in honor of your friend Florence for her contribution to the music industry?
Right. I wanted to do that because I've been here and able to hear people say things that you know, we the Supremes have contributed to their life. And Florence, who, as you mentioned, passed at the age of 32, it's not here. And after all those years, it's been, 30 some years or more that she has not been able to see the love that people had for the Supremes or has for the Supremes and the achievements that we did with our music. You know, she's not able. And so I figured that it would be very good if I could do that for her family to give, so that she even though she's no longer here with us, it would still be in her you know, in her honor. So that's why I started the campaign. And we've been very fortunate that people, I've received letters from China and Germany. I mean, just all over the world, saying that they have sent in letters to the U.S. State Postal Service about getting her that stamp. So, and then of course I heard back from the postal stamp and they were saying that, well, they may stop this whole thing. And I'm like, no, don't stop it now. So they said, well, we may give out one to Aretha Franklin and then maybe Florence, and we just may stop it depending on what happens politically. So we're just waiting now to see, you know, what happens.
I think they're going to be able to straighten out the Postal Service now that everything's changing over, at least. And what a beautiful tribute. And just that speaks volumes about your friendship. And I love the story you were telling us, meeting her in school. And that's so, so amazing. Mary, I want to thank you again for taking the time to join me today on my podcast. And I want to also thank you for all your music that you've been playing for 7 decades and has given millions of people pleasure from all over the world. You've always given so much back in your charitable work and your motivational lectures. And hopefully we'll be working on a film version of A Country Christmas Carol in the spring.
Can I be in it? You know, that's my dream. I'm still there. I would love to act. I didn't tell you that. I said I want to do a musical and all those things, but I would actually love to do some acting, you know, just cameos and a couple little things. But I would really, that would be make my life so complete, I think.
Yeah. And you know what? If I have my way, it's going to happen. You would be such a lovely part of the big screen, or a Hallmark movie or a Lifetime Christmas movie. I'd love to see you. And I know all your fans would love to see you too.
Yeah, I'm hoping so too. Well, we'll see, you know, we'll see how it happens. But in the meantime, I'm having a great time. And thank you for asking me so soon. This is really wonderful. I enjoy, and I enjoyed also speaking about our children. Yeah. And because we do need to do something to make sure that they get a better education than what's out there now. They're not receiving what they need to receive to make the world a better place, not just America or whatever, the world will be a better place. I mean, you know, we need that.
Yes. Yes, we do, more than ever. In one word, Mary, you are supreme.
I'm one of these supremes, but thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much. And our listeners obviously greatly appreciate your time too.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. What a fantastic interview with Mary. I'd now like to bring on the manager of Boys Town National Hotline and our resident professional, Chris Hallstrom. How are you, Chris?
Great. How are you doing, Jacob?
Doing well. Always good to hear your voice.
Well, it was great to listen to your interview with Mary. That was really entertaining. She's got quite a story to tell.
It's an amazing story. I mean, any of those Motown, Detroit, or any of those acts that came out of Detroit at that time, I'm just fascinated with, and I have been since I was a kid. So really blessed to have her on there. And the fact that a lot of her charities align with the same work that we're doing is really, really important. One of the things, though, we discussed with Mary was using arts as a tool to cope. And I know for me personally, acting has been a way to get those feelings out. And in many ways, that would normally probably be bottled up. Chris, can you share with us some of the ideas and resources you offer people who call into the hotline?
Well, honestly, creating any type of art, any form of art, can be a great outlet for people with their mental health. It allows people to share their story, to kind of communicate and release emotions that they may have. A lot of people use different forms of art to cope with stress. It's a distraction. It's an escape. So, and there's so many different ways that people can do that. Whether like for you through acting or Mary with her singing, it's just huge. There's so many options out there, and it's not a one size fits all kind of coping skill.
Right. And we've mentioned in the past, and Mary, of course, mentioned this in her interview with me about writing. She touched on that, more specifically journaling and in her diary and keeping a diary. Yeah, I see this on your Life, Your Voice website. You have quite a bit of content on journaling. So I'm assuming you agree a lot with the benefits of this activity.
Oh, definitely. Instead of kids carrying or adults carrying around all the stressors in their daily life, their ability to be able to get those words and thoughts and feelings down on paper can be such a release of a burden. A lot of times we always tell people, you know, if you have to carry a bag of bricks around, are you going to carry it all at once? Or are you going to try and kind of get some of it off your plate before you have to carry it on? And journaling and getting those thoughts and feelings down on paper can be really, really helpful for people. Yeah. And we've got, like you said, a lot of content on our website, Your Life, Your Voice, related to journaling. We have a tip on, there's like 88 different topics that they can write to. But journaling doesn't have to always just be feelings. Sometimes people will, they'll create an art journal where they will draw pictures. They might put quotes in it. Sometimes it's a list or goals that they may set that they actually write down in their journal. So it doesn't always have to be feelings. Sometimes it's just getting those thoughts down on paper.
Yeah. It's so important to get those thoughts out. Those are fantastic tools and they're all available on yourlifeyourvoice.org. How would one navigate to find those tools?
Honestly, if they go to the search bar up in the top right-hand corner, they can just type in the word journal and it'll pull up all the different tips and worksheets related to journaling. But we do have a lot of different worksheets, journal pages that people can print off that do everything from helping people to set goals to planning out their day or reviewing their day. So there's a lot of different options out there.
So you have a sort of an outline for people that maybe have never journaled before that they can go ahead and start and go, hey, here's the concept. Put your thoughts down.
Exactly. So they don't have to do it from scratch. And the great thing too about journaling that we hear from a lot of people is that over time, they'll go back and they'll review what they wrote in the past and they can see their growth or they can see how maybe they let their emotions rule too much of what was going on at the time. So not only is it a stress reliever, but it's also one of those things that allows people to kind of learn about themselves over time. And I think Mary mentioned that too, the ability to learn about yourself and kind of review your past thoughts and feelings.
Yeah. Now you never stop learning. I know that firsthand. That seems like
exactly
situations in my own life where I go, man, I wish I could have done that better. But the great thing is if you don't fall down, you don't learn, right?
Right.
Pick yourself up and continue forward and take those tools, take those life lessons and move forward.
And that's a good lesson to teach our kids too. I think we've mentioned before in previous podcasts how we can't protect our kids from every bad thing that's going to happen to them. They've got to experience some of those things and learn in order to be able to progress and move forward and improve themselves and be prepared for things that life's going to bring them in the future.
Yeah, sort of the bird coming or falling out of the nest, so to speak, right?
Exactly.
You know, you can't, you know, yes, we're worried as parents, but those situations are what we learn from and we grow from. And as parents, we can try to protect our children as much as possible, but then they might feel as if we're sort of overdoing that protection. We want to make sure that we're their parent, but we're their friend and we're there for them and we're listening.
Right. And, you know, when kids are young, really young, their problems and the situations they get into tend to be a little bit smaller. If we don't help them learn when they're young and the problems are smaller, it's going to be so much worse when they're adults and the problems get bigger and there's bigger consequences.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't agree with that more. There's a lot of my friends and myself, there's been things I wish my parents probably would have addressed at a younger age. And I wouldn't have had to learn it the hard way, the hard knocks of life lessons. But you know, we're all individuals. Our families are individuals, but the great thing is we can find these tools now on Your Life, Your Voice, of course, through boystown.org. Thank you, Chris. I want to say thank you so much again. Thanks for all that you've done. And thank you for your time today.
Well, again, Boys Town and the Hotline appreciate what you're doing for us. And it's great to listen to the interviews that you've had.
Oh, thank you.
Real Conversations with Jacob Young, the mental health podcast, is sponsored by Boys Town. At Boys Town, their slogan is, "He ain't heavy. He's my brother." For over 100 years, Boys Town has been saving children and healing families. And they're only one call away. They're there 24/7. They're always there to help. So please go to boystown.org for all of the details on how to access Boys Town's behavior health services, or simply go to yourlifeyourvoice.org. But if you are in crisis or in need, or need any kind of immediate help, please call the trained counselors at the Boys Town National Hotline at 800-448-3000 or text VOICE to 20121. Again, that number is 800-448-3000 or text VOICE to 20121. In the meantime, love yourselves and love each other. Thanks for joining me on Real Conversations with Jacob Young.
Real Conversations with Jacob Young is a production of the Empire Podcast Network. For more information on this or any of our podcasts, visit empirepodnet.com.